move up to the open mic.
He might as well, Jim. He might as well.
This is by Anne Sexton, who's my favourite poet at the moment.
Ooh.
And it's called Menstruation at 40. I was thinking of a son. The womb is not a clock nor a bell tolling, but in the 11th month of its life, I feel the November of the body, as well as the calendar. In 2 days it will be my birthday, and as always the earth is done with its harvest. This time I hunt for death. The night I lean toward, the night I want. Well then, speak of it. It was in the womb all along. I was thinking of a son, you, the never acquired, the never seeded or unfastened, you of the genitals I feared, the stalk and the puppy's breath. Will I give you my eyes or his? Will you be the David or the Susan? Those two names I picked and listened for. Can you be the man your fathers are? The legs, the leg muscles of Michelangelo, hands from Yugoslavia, somewhere the peasant, Slavic and determined, somewhere the survivor bulging with life. And could it still be possible, all this with Susan's eyes? All this without you, 2 days gone in blood. I myself will die without baptism, a third daughter they didn't bother. My death will come on my name day. What's wrong with the name day? It's only an angel of the sun. Woman, weaving a web over your own, a thin and tangled poison. Scorpio, bad spider, die. My death from the wrists, two name tags, blood, worn like a corsage to bloom, one on the left and one on the right. It's a warm room, the place of the blood. Leave the door open on its hinges. 2 days for your death and 2 days till mine. Love, that red disease, year after year. David, you would make me wild. David, Susan, David, David. Full and disheveled, hissing into the night, never growing old, waiting always for you on the porch, year after year. I would have possessed you before all women, calling your name, calling you mine.
Thank you, Jim.
Next,
Philip Spillane, please.
Because I'm symbolic and emotional in some ways, I have to read one back out to Kieran, one of his own poems from the book. The words were scumbag, osmosis, equality, democracy, and slander. Not enough people calling each other out these days. Whatever happened to getting straight to the crux of it? Now it's all meander, flirt around the issue, in the name of parity. A propped up equality campaign, end game democracy. We all have equal bite of the poisoned apple. Trust before you by a silent order of scumbags, affected by osmosis. When characterizing someone as a bag is taken as slander, how does one even begin to challenge the scum within it? Thank you.
Can we have Kane Coy, please?
I'm going to read a poem from Robinson Jeffers, American poet. It's called Fire on the Hills. The deer were bounding like blown leaves under the smoke in front of the roaring wave of the brush fire. I thought of the smaller lives that were caught. Beauty is not always lovely. The fire was beautiful. The terror of the deer was beautiful. And when I returned down the black slopes after the fire had gone by, an eagle was perched on the jag of a burnt pine, insolent and gorged, cloaked in the folded storms of his shoulders. He had come from far off for the good hunting, with fire for his beater to drive the game. The sky was merciless blue, and the hills merciless black. The somber feathered great birds sleepily merciless between them. I thought, painfully, but the whole mind, the destruction that brings an eagle from heaven is better than mercy.
Thank you, Kane. Next we have Colm Scammy.
I lost my glass that Megs gave me a pair, so that's great. I just want to read a few poems here from a friend of mine, Kevin Clancy, who some of you know.
Just a few. That should be very short.
Yeah, very short poems. Okay. From Kevin Clancy, who died there in November last year. He was from Ballyconnell, County Monaghan, and he wrote some beautiful poems about the borderlands up around there. And he actually was shortlisted for the Patrick Kavanagh Award twice, but his collection wasn't published yet. But here's just a few quick poems from Borders. Good night, Feely. Good night, Ned, my father said, barring our pub door behind them. You see those brothers? In their house tonight, one will sleep north, the other south. My child mind riven. Before the fall, I watched Barney Murray lean his bike on the gate and reach to pluck an onion from our back garden. Biting into it, he said, the woman I'm seeing now can't stand the smell of drink. The beam from his lamp lit the ground before him as he set off again. His white head chimney topped the fair green cottages below as he sailed down the border road. Snow already on Ochlan. Finally, the builder. Patrick McGoran walks the site, takes a pencil from behind his ear, records lint and bread, pegs down two strands of twine. He scoops out soil with a tiny trowel where the lines intersect. He shakes in three handfuls of St. Moog's clay, brought from the burial island. A namesake of mine, a woman from up Corlock way, carried some with her on the Titanic. She survived, he says. He makes a sign of the cross and invites the men to start. Thanks.
Thank you, Colm. Jack Shorten, please.
Thanks, Paul. I blame my father for my love of words and verse. So I'm going to read this. He got me to learn this all off by heart. I'm not going to do it off by heart tonight. Dick Shortland, he loved the verse. He was always spouting poetry and song lyrics and that. It's the old sailor, A.A. Milne, I'm sure you'll know it, a children's poem. There was once an old sailor my grandfather knew who had so many things that he wanted to do that whenever he thought it was time to begin, he couldn't because of the state he was in. He was shipwrecked and lived on an island for weeks, and he wanted a hat and he wanted some breeks and he wanted some nets or a line and some hooks for the turtles and things that you read of in books. And thinking of this, he remembered a thing which he wanted for water, and that was a spring. And he thought that to talk for to he'd look for and keep, if he found it, a goat or some chickens and sheep. Then because of the weather, he wanted a hut with a door to come in by, which opened and shut with a jerk, which was useful if snakes were about, and a very strong lock to keep savages out. He began on the fish hooks, and when he began, he decided he couldn't because of the sun. So he knew what he ought to begin with, and that was to find and to make a large sun-stopping hat. He was making the hat with some leaves from a tree when he thought, I'm as hot as a body can be, and I've nothing to take for my terrible thirst, so I look for spring, and I look for it first. Then he thought as he started, oh dear and oh dear, I'll be lonely tomorrow with nobody here. So he made in his notebook a couple of notes. I must first find some chickens. No, I mean goats. He'd just seen a goat, which he knew by the shape, when he thought, but I must have a boat for escape. And a boat means a sail, which means needles and thread, so I'd better sit down and make needles instead. He began on a needle, but thought as he worked that if this was an island where savages lurked, sitting safe in his hut, he'd have nothing to fear, whereas now they might suddenly breathe in his ear. So he thought of his hut, and he thought of his boat, and his hat, and his bricks, and his chickens, and goat, and the hooks for his food, and the spring for his thirst, but he never could think which he ought to do first. And so in the end he did nothing at all, but basked on the shingle, wrapped up in a shawl, and I think it was dreadful the way he behaved. He did nothing but basking until he was saved.
Thanks, Jack. Benjamin Burns.
This is a poem by the Polish poet Wisława Szymborska called No Title Required. It has come to this. I'm sitting under a tree beside a river on a sunny morning. It's an insignificant event and won't go down in history. It's not battles and pacts whose motives are scrutinized or noteworthy tyrannicides. And yet I'm sitting by this river. That's a fact. And since I'm here, I must have come from somewhere. And before that, I must have turned up in many other places, exactly like the conquerors of nations before setting sail. Even a passing moment has its fertile past. It's Friday before Saturday. It's May before June. Its horizons are no less real than those a marshal's field glasses might scan. This tree is a poplar that's been rooted here for years. The river is the Raba, it didn't spring up yesterday. The path leading through the bushes wasn't beaten last week. The wind had to blow the clouds here before it could blow them away. And though nothing much is going on nearby, the world's no poorer in details for that. It's just as grounded, just as definite, as when migrating races held it captive. Conspiracies aren't the only things shrouded in silence. Retinues of reasons don't trail coronations alone. Anniversaries of revolutions may roll around, but so do oval pebbles encircling the bay. The tapestry of circumstance is intricate and dense, ants stitching in the grass. The grass sewn into the ground, the pattern of a wave being needled by a twig. So it happens that I am, and look. Above me a white butterfly is fluttering through the air, on wings that are its alone, and a shadow skims through my hands that is none other than itself, no one else's but its own. When I see such things, I'm no longer sure that what's important is more important than what's not.
Thank you, Ben. Next we have Julie Aldridge.
This is a poet who I don't know anything about other than it was published in this month's Moth magazine, and its poem I would have liked to have written, and he's called David Sena. It's called Grenfell Tower, and it starts with a little reference from Coventry Telegraph. A woman was gesturing that she was about to throw her baby, and a gentleman ran forward. That's a witness account. Ask yourself, are your hands soft with fingers that can open like the petals of a flower, and wrists like the stem, so they have enough give to absorb the long drop, after which you'll need to hug the weight to your breast and ask yourself, would your footwork be good for the dance that begins with the first steps through the shrubbery along Station Walk? Outside the tower, stepping with your right foot right to the ground zero spot on the concrete, and can your eyes track a small thing falling through darkness and smoke? And is your hearing good? Can you pick out the words of the mother who yells to someone she can't even see as she lets go amid sirens and the panic of doomed children? And can you banish concerns like the stress this will put on your heart, or that you're so clumsy you'll miscalculate, you always miscalculate, because nerves, it's your nerves. So the difficult part is to focus, to set aside worries you have about the hands, the palsy, your neuropathy left you with, and your glasses that steam on humid nights, and ask why you, of all people, should step forward. Because you want to do the right thing, but it's complicated, unless at 1:40 a.m. no one else is around, and she's falling towards only you, this unlikely old man. Which is why, in a life full of misdeeds, regrets, and lies to yourself, most of all you holler you're here, for you know you will do with zeal what all humankind should aspire to do in this burning world.
Thank you, Julie. Next up we have the duo of, is that right, or a duet? Stanley Knott and Mary O'Connell.
Right.
Stay over here.
Right,
like,
you then, yeah.
So you introduce us.
Yeah, is that okay? That way for you.
Yeah.
So we were going to do this last week, but the MC, it was me, made the balls of the timing. We were last on the list, so we cancelled it this week. And it kind of fits. I'm going to be sharing the words of Tom Waits with you, and Mary's going to be sharing the words of some obscure asshole poet from the back end of nowhere.
Okay.
So I'm going to be singing, watch your ears. Oh, I hope that I don't fall in love with you, 'cause falling in love just makes me blue. Well, the music plays and you display your heart for me to see. I've had a beer and now you're here calling out for me. Oh, I hope that I don't fall in love with you.
Oh, I hope that you will fall in love with me, 'cause falling in love is the greatest truth. See, I know your face, and this old place is where you often call to have a beer, and now I'm here, I'm ready for the fall. Oh, I hope that you will fall in love with me.
Oh. Now the room is crowded, people everywhere, and I wonder, should I offer you a chair? Well, if you sit down with this old clown and take this frown and break it, before the evening's gone away, I think that we could make it. Still, I hope that I don't fall in love with you.
Well, the room is crowded. Still, I find a chair. As I take my seat, I'm trying not to stare, but I see your face and want to trace my hands along your skin. And in that moment, all is clear. Oh Lord, let us begin. Oh, I hope that you will fall in love with me.
Well, the night does funny things inside a man. These old tomcat feelings you don't understand. When I turn around to look at you, you light a cigarette. I wish I had the guts to bum one, but we've never met. Jesus, I hope that I don't fall in love with you.
Well, new love does funny things inside a girl. See, my head, my heart, they're both in such a whirl. There's a sense I get you're watching me as I light a cigarette. Great seas unfurl inside my chest. Won't you dive into my depths? Because if you do, then you will fall in love with me.
I can see that you are lonesome just like me. And at being late, you'd like some company. Well, I turn around to look at you. You look back at me. The guy you're with, he's up and split. The chair next to you free. Still, I hope that I don't fall in love with you. You're pushing it now, Mary.
So much time has passed. The night is almost done. And my friend is gone. I'm sitting on my own. You turn around and look at me. I look into your eyes. I think the moment has arrived. But no, we're both too shy. Yet I know for sure you'll fall in love with me.
Now it's closing time, the music's fading out. It's last call for drinks, I'll have another stout. Well, I turn around to look at you, you're nowhere to be found. I search the place for your lost face. Guess I'll have another round. And I think that I just fell in love with you.
Here's the last verse.
Mary has the last word.
As I close my eyes, I'm pondering our fate. I just had to leave because it got so late. But you're in my heart forever now, and there you will remain. The only question left to ask is how to light this flame, because I know you fell in love with me.
X-rated stuff. Not the first time it's happened in our world. We have Bernadette McCarthy, please.
Yeah, two very, very short poems. The first poem is by a Dublin poet, Neville Keary. I think he must be in his 80s now. Far Away. Is the poetry group meeting in Brussels? Is that the thread stretching to Japan that pulls me out of bed to write again? The shock of the new is reinterpreting what we know. And the second poem is by a poet from Sudan called El Sadi Fil Radi. And in Arabic.
Read it out of it.
Well, I was going to read the translation, but in Arabic it's called Lahif, which means breathless. So the translation's by Sarah Maguire and Hafiz Khair, I think. Breathless. Your heart thumps as if she were already at your door, or as if expecting her. All the birds in the midday sky arrive to clamour at your window. An age of patience, a forest of fluttering.
Thanks, Bernadette. It's great to get translations from the Poetry Centre. Sarah Maguire passed away last year, actually. She's made a huge impact in translating poetry from around the world. Shauna Lee Lynch.
This is from a collection called There Are More Beautiful Things Than Beyonce. Which I'm not sure is true, but it's written by an American poet called Morgan Parker. Charging in the dark room while you sleep, I am touch and go. I flicker and get turned on, exterior shell, interior disco. I like my liver steeled as a gun, my wires unbuttoned to you. The reason I was built is to outlast some terribly feminine sickness that is delivered to the blood through kale salad and pity and men with straight-haired girlfriends. The future's a skirt of expectation to mourn. This way, hard-cased, you can put your eyes on me. It's less about obedience than silvery lipstick stains. It's mostly about machine tits. Artificially, I'm interested. Virtually, I'm drunk. The future's a girlish helmet with circuits that need doctors. In the future, our bodies can't. I dare you. Tell me, apart from other girls, nothing aches in here. It's a quiet, calculated shame.
Hi, Shauna. You were halfway through the open mic. It's 11, done, 11 to go, and only about 11 minutes to do it in, so keep them short, lads, please. Next, we have Patricia Walsh.
In the course of time, we've seen lots of first-rate poets by first-rate poems. And now I want to treat you somebody else to the opposite end of the scale. William Topaz McGonagall, he's a poet in the 19th century, and he's widely classed as the worst poet in English language.
So bad it's good.
So bad it's brilliant, yeah. And his most famous poem is the Tate Bridge Disaster. It's okay. Beautiful railway bridge of the silvery Tay, alas, I'm very sorry to say that 90 lives have been taken away on the last Sabbath day of 1879, which will be remembered for a very long time. 'Twas about 7 o'clock at night, and a wind blew with all its might, and a rain came pouring down, and a dark cloud seemed to frown, and the demon of the air seemed to say, I'll go down the Bridge of Tay. When the rain train left Edinburgh, the passenger's heart felt light and felt no sorrow, but Boreas blew a terrific gale, which made their hearts for to quail, and many of the passengers who feared would say, I hope God will send us safe across the Bridge of Tay. But when the train came near to Warmet Bay, Boreas he did loud and angry bray, and took the central girders of the Bridge of Tay, on the last Sabbath day of 1889, which will be remembered for a very long time. So the train sped on with all its might, and Bonnie Dundee soon hove in sight, and the passengers' heart felt light, thinking they enjoyed themselves in the new year, with all their friends at home they loved most dear, and men wished them all a happy new year. So the train moved along slowly on the Bridge of Tay until it was about midway. Then the central girders to the crash gave way, and down went the train and the passengers into the Tay. A storm fiend did loudly bray, because 90 lives had been taken away on the last Sabbath day of 1879, which will be remembered for a very long time. As soon as the tapestry began to be known, the alarm from mouth to mouth was blown, and a cry rang out over the town. Good heavens, the Tay Bridge was blown down. And passing a train from Edinburgh, which filled all the people's hearts with sorrow, and made them for to turn pale, because none of the bastards were safe to tell the tale, how the disaster happened on the Sabbath day of 79, which will be remembered for a very long time. It must have been an awful sight to witness in the dusky moonlight, while storm fiend did laugh and angry debray along the railway bridge of Silvery Tay. O ill-fated bridge of the old Silvery Tay, I must now conclude my lay by telling the world furiously without the least dismay that your central girders were not given way. At least many sensible men do say, had they been supported on each side with buttresses, at least many men, sensible men confesses, for the stronger be your house to build, the less chance you have of being killed. Thank you.
Just when you thought it couldn't get any worse. Thanks, Patricia. The worst poem ever. Megan Cronin.
So this poem I'm about to read is by Melissa May, and she's actually the person that really got me into slam poetry and spoken word, and it's actually I got inspired to think the poems I actually wrote on body image and body positivity. So this is Dear Ursula. In 2012, Disney released a line of villain dolls depicting Ursula, the classically full-figured sea witch from The Little Mermaid, as a designer, couture, size zero. From one rolling midsection and tameless will to another, my sweet Ursula, I cannot imagine the sick flip of your stomach to see your image dissected, chin shaved, waist cinch, your silhouette robbed of every ounce of delicious curve. To find after 2 decades of existence that your evil was more worthy of preservation than the iconic body that held you, you, big lady, were the only Disney character who ever looked like me. And while you may not have had the waistline of a princess, I'd be goddamned if you didn't have the swagger of a queen. The way you sashayed around your lair in full makeup, black flamenco number cut so low in the back that your every twist and shimmy displayed the gorgeous tuck of your rolls. You made back fat look fucking sexy. You made living in this body a little less a curse. And I wonder how they told you. Did they sit you down over tea, delicately frosted cakes lining your chipped porcelain? Explain it as a marketing technique, a vehicle to make you more palatable to a culture that demands perfection. I hope you crushed that fucking teapot in the clench of your fist. I hope you grew 1,000 feet tall and drowned them in the whirlpool of your rage. I wish I could have watched you suck the voices from their tiny, breakable throats. But I know you wept. I know you licked the icing from each and every cake. I know you broke like a slow burn. Wasn't it enough that they made you a witch? That you were already beyond the bounds of their franchise royalty? They expected little girls to recoil from the wicked inside your laugh when instead they worshipped your honesty. Ursula, I don't want you cut down into bite-sized pieces. You weren't easy to swallow for a reason. I want you larger than life. Flaming red lips, black flamenco dress. I want the thick of your tentacles, your conjurer's hands, the jiggle of your ample bust. I want you dressed to the nines on a runway. I want every little girl to see a heroine in a size 24. Ursula, queen of the ocean, you were never just a witch to me. You were perfect. Every pound, every inch, every swell, perfect. And I pity the poor, unfortunate soul who would dare paint you as anything less. Thank you.
Thank you, Megan. We have Charles Clark.
I should have gone for something modern, but I didn't. Louis MacNeice. Now, a long time dead, really. And when in his very early days, you have to take your mind back to Sir Harry's Road, Birmingham, where he happened to be with a group of other people being entertained by the professor. The odds was an Irishman of great note, who wrote one or two very famous books, and ended up as his literary executive. That's another story. Snow, the room was suddenly rich, and the great bay window was spawning snow and pink roses against it, soundlessly collateral and incompatible. World is suddener than we fancy it. World is crazier and more of it than we think, incorrigibly plural. I peel and portion a tangerine and spit the pips and feel the drunkenness of things being various. And the fire flames with a bubbling sound, for world is more spiteful and gay than one supposes. On the tongue, on the eyes, on the ears, in the palms of one's hands, there is more than glass between the snow and the huge roses.
Charles, that's 14 done, 8 to go with 5 minutes, so avoid the preamble, please. Grab or curse. After which we'll have Ray Hanrahan.
Sissy Young's to Rosa Alice Branco by Paul Durkin. That first year in Cork City, 71 to 72, I spent the afternoons from 4 to 6 sitting alone sipping pints of Smithwick in a public house in the Bandon Road, Sissy Young's, reading Bishop Berkeley's A Treatise Concerning the Principles of Human Knowledge. I, ex-footballer, ex-hurler, ex-high jumper, branded by the dominant males of the Irish tribe, a hippie, rejoiced in the 18th century. I sat in the private lounge, distinct from the public bar, because the private lounge was nearly always empty. Men in the public bar saluted me through the hatch. Sissy Young's All For Micah Banquet, more anonymous, cosier by far than any salty, arty Kinsale bar. That year in Sissy Young's reading Berkeley was a foundation year in my life as a writer, and, if I may meekly, profoundly trumpet, my life as a virtuoso university teacher I never became. An attacking player on Berkeley's dream team, Sissy Young's on the Bandon Road was my University of the Bermudas, where I learnt the basics of my trade, learnt to think the hard way, learnt how to head the ball one way, looking the other way, learnt the relationship between soul and body, learnt to communicate through the hatch, learnt to introduce Libyan storytellers to Cork insurance officials, learnt that reality is poetry, poetry reality, learnt the way of all things, learned the existence of God, that at 5 in the afternoon on the Bandon Road in Cork City in Ireland in the empty private lounge of Sissy Young's, to be is to be perceived.
Thank you, Rob. And Ray Hanrahan.
This one is actually from an old college friend of mine, Andrew Keneally, and it's very short, and it's from when I first started writing poetry, which is a long, long time ago. Poem of the Pissed Off. This person's weary of apologizing for knowing. This person's lost what it feels to be human, and I cannot find anyone to really share with. And the world nearly kills me, throw myself in front of a train. End my obligations, is it worth feeling for the crowds? You can call me arrogant, I call myself sad. Would it be salvation to go mad?
Thank you, Ray. We'll have Derek Sellen, please, and then Joe Harding.
Right, this is another Living at Least, one of my favourite poets, entirely. If we could get the hang of it entirely, it would take too long. All we know is the splash of words in passing and falling twigs of song. And when we try to eavesdrop on the great presences, it is rarely, but by a stroke of luck, we can appropriate even a phrase entirely. If we could find our happiness entirely in somebody else's arms, we should not fear the spears of the spring or the city's yammering fire alarms. But as it is, the spears each year go through our flesh, and almost hourly, bell or siren banishes the blue eyes of love entirely. And if the world were black or white entirely, and all the charts were plain, instead of a mad weir of tigerish waters, a prism of delight and pain, we might be surer when we wish to go, or again we might be merely bored, but in brute reality, there is no road that is right entirely.
Thank you, Eric. And Dora Harding.
Great, I have two poems by McNeese. The great Louis McNeese.
Sorry, Dora, can you keep it to one? We've only a couple of minutes left.
No, I just said it's great to hear two poems.
Oh, it's great to hear that. Such that he had two poems by him. No worries.
One poem. It's by my daughter, and it was chosen by Evan Boland for the next issue of
Poetry
Ireland. And it's called South Terrace. I had a shop in South Terrace in my previous lifetime. South Terrace. That sweet, smoky smell, slick grit of oil and rubber on terracotta diamonds, the absence of spring cleaning or any other seasons. A hopeful child tests the bells on all the pink and purple bicycles she will never own. Behind, the workshop is decked out in coloured potions, poisons marked with X's, clear to even the smallest of girls, busy building a cardboard castle, dungeons hoarding ball bearings. Downstairs, her dad guards the coffers, never empty, but never full. It was a wonder how you balanced it all on the cycle across town. School bag, violin, daydreams, my whole world, while yours was perched upon the crossbar, curls flying, feeling invincible. I never felt the cost of a sale or saw the old man before you, only your name above the door, the first one I learned to speak.
Almost there, lads. We have to be very quick now with the last four people. Kieran McCartan and Ted O'Regan.
Just wanted to congratulate Paul on the 11th anniversary of his brainchild. Thank you. This is a poem by Helen Burke from a book that I got out of Vail ages ago when she went here. It's called Tigers. I know there is a beginning and an end to most things. I know that when you're in the middle of two people, one feels left out. I know that between today and tomorrow, this or that will happen. I know that when you say you're not worried, that is not really how you feel. I know that to be sure of something, even for 1 minute, holds no eternal guarantee. I know that landscapes where I've lived are still the same. It's me that changes, isn't constant. I know the sea has no enemies. I know that time will tell. I know that without permission everything is possible. I know religion is no excuse. I know love is a word in need of translation. I know to start caring again is as hard as to stop. I know today has no roof and yesterday has no mirror. I know that life is probably not a film someone has made. I know that there are people who never dream. I know that to dream of white means death. I know that to dream of tigers, always of tigers, is unlikely and not to be wished for, but nonetheless I do. And I know that tigers should not be held by their tails.
This is For the Dead by Adrienne Rich. I dreamed I called you on the telephone to say, be kinder to yourself, but you were sick and would not answer. The waste of my love goes on this way, trying to save you from yourself. I have always wondered about the leftover energy, the way water goes rushing down a hill long after the rains have stopped, or the fire you want to go to bed from but cannot leave burning down but not burned down, the red coals more extreme, more curious in their flashing and dying than you wish they were, sitting long after midnight.
Thank you, Timid. Our oldest there. Our second last reader is Ian Brooks, and then we're going to end up with Max Queen. You sure? All right, okay. Thank you, Max. Appreciate it. Our last reader for tonight is Ian Brooks. No, Max, we definitely need you up here. Ian has gone home. Our last performer for tonight is Max Queen.
Because I got it from Ty for Christmas, and I brought my brother Richard, and he said, I'll teach you to play that properly. And we played together once, and I lost him the following day, so it's very special tonight. It's the last song we've sang together. So, I give brother Philip here.
Lantern is burning up on the tabletop, and she is softly falling. The air is still in the silence of my room. I hear your voice softly calling. If I could only have you near to breathe a sigh, I do. On this winter's night with you. The smoke is rising from the shadows overhead, the shades of night are lifting. I read again between the lines upon the page the words of love you sent me. If I could only know for sure that you were lonely too, I will be happy just to hold the hand I love on this winter's night with you. Here it is. Lamp is gnawing away, lamp is growing dim. Morning light sleeps across the window pane. The shreds of snow are drifting. If I could only have you near to breathe a sigh or two, I would, oh God, I would be happy just to hold a hand around.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you all for coming. It's been a great night. Thank you to Long Valley for being so patient with us. We'd love to buy you a drink. If you come over to Mainz, we'd love to buy you one for our 11th anniversary. And we'll be over there in about 10 minutes. Thank you to Derek Sillen for coming, for Peter Regan and Jim Kirkwood. All of you, congratulations, and we'll see you next Monday.